Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guest and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. If you would have any comments that you'd like to make during this broadcast or any questions you'd like to call in, you can do so by dialing area code 646-716-4893. Or if you're feeling a little radio shy, you can feel free to email me at bonkay@aol.com. That's bonkaye@aol.com. So good evening, everyone, and I hope you had a good week filled with as little stress as possible, which I know is really hard for a lot of you, but I want to say thank you to all the kind listeners who keep in touch with me, send me emails, and give me lots of support to keep supporting you. So I hope it was a pleasant week. We have a new guest with us, someone who's new to our show, and hopefully he'll become one of our regular therapists who come to visit us. This is Mr. Bill Martin from Chicago. Bill, welcome to our Straight Wives Talk Show.
Well, thanks, Bonnie. I'm very happy to be here, and thank you for inviting me.
Well, Bill, you are kind of new to me. I didn't know you before this year, and it takes a lot to impress me. But after reading all about you and talking to you, I was really impressed. And I think it takes a lot, you know, to really impress me when it comes to therapists because of the fact that
yeah.
I really, you know, have had so many nightmare experiences, you know, dealing with therapists.
Yes,
especially
of course,
on this particular issue, you know, which a lot of therapists are totally unaware of and they totally don't understand the implications. And as much as you would think people would be a little more educated on this issue right now, they still aren't. But when I spoke with you and, you know, we've been in touch, and I felt that you're certainly someone I would feel so comfortable referring anybody to, because I think
that
you're
nice
really right on.
Yeah.
Oh, it's not nice. I think it's wonderful that I found you, or you found me.
I did find you, yeah.
I know. And I thought that was so exciting that you really, I grilled you a little bit, but that's okay. I just have to
that's
feel
okay.
like,
yeah,
you
it's
know,
good.
We have the right people in the right places, because our women have been, you know, misled in so many cases and spent years wasted on therapy to try to make a marriage work that can't work.
Exactly.
And being given bad advice by therapists or being put on the spot, well, you have to try harder in a relationship that just doesn't have potential. So maybe you can tell people a little bit about your background first.
Yeah, I'm a licensed clinical social worker and have just had a lot of family therapy training and couples therapy training, and I'm, you know, being 61, I'm in the last third of my career, I think, and I just kind of do what I'd love to do, and I'm, you know, really focusing on working with more couples, and I'm familiar with the way the brain operates. I'm a big fan of all the neuroscience research that's out, and it's very helpful in working with couples. And as you mentioned, I did find you, you know, via the internet, of course, I guess the way we're all doing research these days. I work in Chicago, on the north side of Chicago, where there's a lot of young people. And I quite often am sent the boyfriends or the husbands of colleagues who are working with couples. And, you know, quite often these, you know, young men become more aware of their sexual orientation, and it just takes a long time for them to come out. But I find myself in the position of just being a gentle, affirming therapist and helping them feel more comfortable with, you know, accepting and disclosing their sexual orientation. So, you know, it's quite a, you know, as you know, and your listeners know, and you've written about this a lot, it's quite a crisis for the female partner, the straight female partner, and the men don't, like, as you have said in your research, you know, the kind of the majority of the men don't really explain or disclose their sexual orientation to their female partners. They just sort of end the relationship or get a divorce, and it's quite a tragic and unfortunate situation for the straight females. And I do a lot of work with individual females too, who are involved with men who it's kind of funny, because they say, well, as I listen, they start beginning to say, well, my friend wonders if he might be gay. And I spend some time just helping the female clients, the individual female clients, exploring that and become really open to thinking about that for the first time. So, mm-hmm. So it's a really, you know, it's a huge problem, as you've so often stated. And it is really true that very few therapists are really aware of the fact that maybe this male partner in this marriage or relationship might be gay. So,
well,
I think one of the problems
I find, and maybe you can address this a little bit, you know, having worked with couples outside this realm for many years also, when there's, mm-hmm. you know, two straight partners involved, and kind of the theory is that, you know, it does take two to make a marriage, and you can have two good people who just have very different outlooks on life, so things may not be working out, and not every marriage, I don't think, is meant to be and stay together forever.
Of course, yeah.
People do outgrow each other, they go in different directions, But usually they say, you know, it takes two to make a marriage. And in most cases, I agree on that. The problem is with these marriages, it's not a matter if it takes two and you're both on, you know, growing apart or things are going wrong or you're reacting to him. To me, when you have somebody in the marriage who's gay, it really changes the whole dynamics of that. It's like not
right.
that you can work on this problem, because this problem is just not going to be resolved.
Right.
It's always going to be there, and then you have to
right.
make that choice if you whether or not you want to stay in that situation, which
right.
I think a lot of women in the beginning do a lot of bargaining and saying,
yes.
well, I can live with this if. And
right.
I was one of those women also when this first happened to me. I didn't want to split up a family. I loved my husband. You know, we had a
right.
baby.
Yeah.
And I said, well, I didn't say the word gay, but I thought maybe bisexual. Back
right.
in those days before we knew differently, you know, so to me I felt,
right.
well, maybe he was just bisexual. And I made an agreement with him and I said to him, look, if every 6 months I put it in a pretty package, you have to go away and do something with a consenting adult, and I never have to know about it. I can live with it. You know, so
right.
we start making these little deals of what can I live with? What is my
right.
limit that I can live with? And, of
right.
course, it's totally unrealistic in the situation because it just doesn't happen that way.
Right.
But do you agree that sometimes there doesn't have to be two to make a marriage when you have this situation?
Do you mean when you say two to make a marriage?
Well,
I think in these kind of relationships, Bonnie, I think as you know so well, the gay male partner can be very charming and engaging and very sexual in the very
uh-huh.
beginning parts of the relationship, but over the course of time, they begin to. It's almost like the intimacy that's demanded in a male-female relationship. It begins to, you know, their own identity and sensations as a gay man begin to cause them to pull away and to push away their female partners. And it's very confusing to female partners to be interested in being sexually intimate with their husbands or boyfriends, but never that part of the relationship just really falling off the cliff. So it's just impossible. One person, like the female partner, can do a lot, and those women do a lot, as you yourself did, to try to make compromises and try to make it work. But I think bargaining is the proper term to be, you know, to use for this sort of situation. It's just not going to the relationship is not going to work, and the female partner is going to become increasingly unhappy, and rightfully so, because the marriage is based on a fundamental lie about
right.
the male partner's sexuality.
And it's not just about sexuality. You know, as I explain to women, that when somebody is gay, it's not just about sex.
Right.
It's about who a person is as a person. Gay is just not a sexual thing.
Right.
It's also an identity factor.
Right.
And
yeah.
right. And I'm just curious, like the men that you work with who are in this situation, I always tell my women that for the most part, I truly do believe in my heart these men go into these marriages loving their wives, hoping against
yeah.
hope that loving someone enough is going to change those feelings and those attractions. I mean, these are the men that I work with, what they tell me all the time, that they really did believe that if they did the right thing, they wouldn't be feeling this, because these men don't want to be gay.
Exactly.
And they think
yeah.
they have the opportunity to escape gay by getting married
right.
and finding someone
yeah.
who will love them enough, you know, to so-called fix them. But when
correct.
It doesn't work, a lot of times I see these feelings, like, revert. And the feelings of love become feelings of resentment and feelings of anger. And very often they become very emotionally abusive to you. And the way I believe this, and you can tell me if you would agree with this, is that they start looking at you like you're the keeper of their prison. They feel imprisoned because they've put themselves in that position, but they look at you and they think you're holding that key to keeping them from going out and being, you know, happy. Do you
right.
feel that could be like one of the issues?
I absolutely, yeah. definitely you call it projection. They're unhappy about being trapped in this marriage that they themselves selected and mm-hmm. chose, but they're blaming their wives, and as you said, quite often being very abusive. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it comes down to we've talked about this before a little bit. You know, there are gay men who are not really aware of being gay, or their sense of being gay is so deeply buried they're just not connected to it. And mm-hmm. there's so much pressure. We live in a heterosexist culture where mm-hmm. being gay is not a very popular identity, and there's just pressure for these men to get married. And as I mentioned earlier, and you've talked quite a bit about this just even tonight, that they go into the marriage really loving their wives, but over the course of time begin to become more aware of their own feelings, their own identity, their desire to not be in this marriage, feeling trapped, and beginning to go out on the side and have hookups with other men.
Exactly. And one of the things I wanted to ask you as a family therapist, I have my own views, which don't necessarily mean they're always right, but I feel pretty strongly on the issue of this. And this became somewhat of a topic on our support board tonight. Women are saying, you know, there's always, was I right to stay longer? Should I have left sooner? Does it take more strength to stay in a marriage that's dysfunctional? Or does it take more strength to walk away? And I say you can't always, you know, make a judgment all the way for everybody. You know, different things for different people, different situations. But
right.
I do say that overall, that staying in a marriage for the sake of the children is not necessarily a very good thing at all when you don't have a good marriage to start with. And I guess that's because I came from a bad, you know, a broken family myself, you know, where there was two straight parents. But I grew up, you know, my brother and I were similar age, and I have three sisters that are, you know, much younger than us. And my parents used to fight a lot. And when they ran out of things to fight about, they fought about the children. And even though they didn't think we were hearing them because it was late at night, they were always fighting about us, and we never felt good about ourselves. We always felt guilty that we were making our parents unhappy. And, you know, we didn't understand. We were children. And I think we grew up with some really bad psychological scars from that, where my parents did eventually divorce. My three younger sisters, even though they didn't have financial security, they had more emotional security.
Right.
And I just think that raising children in a household where there's an unhappy wife because she's staying there for the sake of the children, knowing that her husband's out doing his thing, and he's emotionally absent from the family, and she's saying, well, you know, I'm doing it for the sake of the kids. I don't really believe that for the sake of the kids is, you know, women tell me, and I can't believe this, that, you know, I say that children know you're unhappy. You think they don't know you're crying? You think they don't see? And they say, no, my children never see me unhappy. Okay, I don't believe that, do you?
No, not at all, because, you know, I've had adult children that have told me that they knew, or at least they deeply suspect that their father or a mother was gay, and
uh-huh.
that it was never discussed. It was like the elephant in the room.
Uh-huh.
And having worked with a lot of gay men over the years, you know, there is such a, you know, the sort of the gaydar effect, the chemistry that occurs when you meet someone, you're in the room with them, and there's so much nonverbal messaging that goes on. That I find it unlikely that children growing up in this day and age wouldn't begin to suspect. I mean, they know that their parents are not very physically intimate. They're not affectionate, and dad is gone quite a bit of time. I can't imagine that they don't suspect that there is this sort of mixed marriage situation where dad might be gay and mom is straight and very unhappy. So, you know, I think that, you know, it's, you know, one of the themes I think in all, you know, therapy work is the importance of honesty.
Mm-hmm.
And if a man is gay and lying to his wife, and you know, says he's staying in the marriage because of the children, there's just going to be a lot of damage done.
Well, how about the woman that's saying, I know my husband's gay, but, you know, I just have to stay here for the sake of the children and just, you know, be miserable and angry until they're grown up. You know, I just feel
unhealthy
growing up in that environment.
Well, you know, Bonnie, I don't think I guess we all have our own, you know, sort of struggles in our own families. I know I grew up with a father who drank abusively
mm-hmm.
for many, many years until I was old enough myself and smart enough to do a family intervention, and that really changed the course of our family life. But there was a lot of damage done to me and my brothers growing up. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, we know from the way the research on trauma and memory, we know that negative experiences are imprinted more powerfully in our minds, because it's based on the evolutionary need for survival, that we have to remember that if we stick our hand in fire, that's going to be painful and that's dangerous to us. So situations, memories that have danger and threat and injury associated with them, we're going to remember them much more powerfully. That's why in therapy, as you know, it's like people begin to connect with these memories because they feel safe for the first time, and when they do start to remember some of these things, it's there's a lot of grief, there's a lot of pain and suffering. So yeah,
uh-huh.
the kids in these kind of families are it's going to have a profound impact on them, and it may be kind of a silent impact. It may not be, you know, the kind of wounds that occur in family life when parents are abusive or behaving in ways which are damaging to kids. It's not like there's cuts and bruises. It's not like physical abuse. It's a much more subtle and can be a much more sinister kind of,
it is,
you know,
and sometimes it's really blatant and not even subtle, because I think today, more so than before, the children become the keepers of the secret, and that's a lot of pressure to put on children. You know, children are finding information on the computers about their fathers, because
right.
kids are
yeah.
so savvy they're so technically savvy today that
right.
they see all kinds of porn on the computer. I mean, I work with a lot of adult children of gay, you know, of gay fathers who have
right.
so
right.
many issues. But I'll never forget, I had a young lady on our show a couple years ago, Crystal, and I felt like crying when I listened to her, because she had found porno on her dad's computer, and she confronted him, and he said, look, you know, if you tell your mom, it's going to break up the marriage, and then you're going to have to feel responsible for, you know, the marriage falling apart. And he said, does it pay to have to do that to your mother and make her, you know, this poor kid had to carry this with her.
That's
and
tragic.
Said it really broke her up through the years, that it really affected her own personal relationships. You know, she was a young adult. And she said, as
yeah.
far as meeting, you know, people and having trust became such a big issue for a lot of these
of
kids.
Of course. Yeah, if your father is not only lying to your mom and the rest of the family, and then forces you to keep such a damaging secret, it's a horrible form of abuse. It's terrible.
I think
and I'm,
so.
As you say, I'm
a
sure,
lot of these
you know,
kids
like a,
have told me
an
this.
Adult, you know, a child like that who would grow up would have a lot of difficulty trusting anyone. And I think the other part is that she or he might miss signals in their potential partners. You know, they may see someone who's very charming initially, as you know, some of these, a lot of the gay men can be, who engage these women. You know, they may not be able to see through the facade, and may believe that here's the man of her dreams. You know,
I think it really hurts their future relationships. From what they've told me, like, one of the issues is role modeling. When you don't have parents who are affectionate towards each other, because in these relationships, there's usually a really big lack of affection.
Correct.
There's a lack, of course, intimacy. So naturally,
right.
there's a lack of affection. And
right.
when you're living, you know, I think it's so much different once you know your father's gay. But when you don't, and you're looking for male imagery, and they don't quite fit into the role, like they're not doing the same things with you that other fathers are doing, or they're a lot of these guys are. I don't like to generalize. I'm just saying the men who get married, not the gay community. But, you know, they seem to be very much into narcissism, many of them, you know, putting their own thoughts first about them, looking at themselves before their children. You know, maybe it's
right.
because they're trapped in an artificial situation where they shouldn't be, so they're always thinking about the beautiful world outside where they want to be.
Right.
But they don't make that same connection. So I think kids
well,
have told me
yeah.
that it's hard for them to develop relationships with other people. Like one girl said to me, this guy wanted to hold her hand. She said, well, and she felt really funny. We don't do that. You know, that's not how I was raised, you know, to be holding hands. And he says, well, he wanted a hug. Or he says, oh, you know, she says, that didn't go on in our family. He says, well, that's how people do react. You know, that's a natural thing for women, you know, to feel like that.
Right. And he, yeah.
Do you agree with that?
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's, you know, like one of the, you know, when we look at, the concept of narcissism and, you know, how it applies to gay men and in relationships with straight women, it's, you know, one of the major components of narcissism is a lack of empathy. So, you know, these men, like you were saying earlier, they kind of blame the wife as the keeper of the key of the prison. It's, they don't have a lot of empathy for their wives, and they have very little insight about what the impact of their behavior might be on them. So it sort of looks like they don't care, and that's the way it looks and feels, I think. But I think in a deeper way, they may not have much capacity for empathy, and that's empathy is such a, you know, if you don't have empathy for your partner, there's just no way to be emotionally connected. So
exactly. And that's where the
yeah.
emotional break, you know, connection breaks down.
Yeah, right. You know, even in heterosexual marriages, we know that the major cause of divorce is the drifting apart emotionally when two people begin to disconnect emotionally. That's the beginning of the, you know, failure in that marriage. And in, you know, these kind of mixed marriages, it's based on a lie. You know, it's just based on a lie. And, you know, I've had a couple situations.
Not only is it based on a lie, Bill, but I'm going to tell you that some of the women end up, about 20% of my women have sexually transmitted diseases. And, you know, are stuck with these. I mean, HIV, you know, these are things that aren't going away.
Of course, yeah.
You know, herpes,
right.
all kinds of
right.
chlamydia, all kinds of different things. And
right.
their husbands can't even be nice enough to admit that they got it from them. They're saying to the wives, you must have screwed up somewhere. You must
right.
have been cheating on me. You must have caught it, you know, in the, wearing somebody's bathing suit. You know, everything but being
yeah.
honest or telling the truth about it.
Right.
You know, the deception is really the hard part. And I think the emotional deception in these marriages, this is the hardest part. And the fact that you never quite know what's true and what's not true. I know there's a term, gaslighting, for our women, I call
right.
it gay lighting, when they try to make
right.
you think that you're crazy, that how
right.
dare you accuse
yeah.
me? You know,
right.
there's something wrong with you. I'm happy
right.
in the marriage. You're the one who's not happy. I don't
right.
have a problem. And many of these guys are really controlling. And I explain
right.
it because they don't have control on their own life. They have to control you. And they're so afraid their secret's going to come out. Many of them move you around. You know, they don't stay in one place. They're afraid you're going to have friends who are going to figure out what's going on. I mean, the deception is just so difficult. And I say this as someone who was a really strong woman when I met my ex-husband. I was really strong. I mean, I met him. I was living in
yeah.
New York at the time. I was leading a strong kind of
right.
very activist kind of group back in the 70s. And
right, yeah.
I needed somebody strong for me because I was a strong woman. But
right.
boy, he had me beaten down within, you know, a few years that I didn't even know who I was anymore.
Yeah.
Because they
yeah,
become, some of them are rageaholics, and, you know, I don't like yelling and, you know, you just give in.
Well, you and other women and, you know, men too sometimes, but it's certainly more common for women to be emotionally battered by their husbands. And in these situations, when the gay husband is really doing everything they can to deceive the wife and maintain the facade, there can be very traumatizing for women. So women like yourself, who had been strong at the beginning of the marriage, just become so beaten down that they doubt themselves. They may think they are the ones who are crazy, and why would they, you know, suspect that there might be something going on with their husband, or why they blame themselves for his unwillingness to be emotionally or, you know, physically intimate with them. So, yeah,
that's usually
because
they're blaming us, though, Bill. You know, it's not like they take the responsibility. And I think what hurts me so much is when women are robbed of what they were born with, which is their human sexuality.
Exactly.
And they're told things by their husbands that are so horrible. Like, and I see women spending thousands of dollars getting breast reductions, breast increases, liposuction, gastric bypasses, you know, changing their body, changing their shape. And then, you know, because their husbands are saying, well, you're too fat. Well, you're too thin. Well, you're not this, you're not that. You know, you're not busty enough. You're too busty. They'll spend money to do anything to try to be woman that they think their husband wants, when he doesn't want a woman. So why can't they just be honest? You know, why do they have to say, you know, how much does it hurt a woman, one of our wonderful members, you know, she was so hurt so badly when her husband said to her, listen, I wouldn't make love to you, but you have a very bad body odor. Which, you know, of course she didn't, but she had to live with that trauma, and she never asked again.
Right.
She kept washing herself and using all kinds of lotions. She went to doctors, dermatologists. How do you do this to a person that you supposedly love?
That's a really, you know, it's certainly one of the diagnostic factors that when I hear a man begin to say that his wife smells bad, I think that's a real a red light goes off for me. I mean, it's just not something that straight men say. And it's terrible that a woman has to live through that. And like you're saying, they're spending a lot of money and doing all sorts of things to try to make themselves beautiful and sexually attractive to their husbands, and it's just not even possible. You know, it's even like on the intimate, in the house kind of level, I know that many of the women that I've worked with talk about, you know, trying to wear seductive clothing and trying to suggest showering, you know, taking, you know, baths together and showering together and, you know, candlelight dinners. And it's just very, it's sad to think about them working so hard to try to attract a man who's never going to be attracted to them.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's terrible. Yeah.
Well, let me ask you this. I know that I believe that anger can be a very positive thing in your mourning period, that you have to be angry in order to start fighting back. But here's where I have the problem. Maybe you can give some good advice, because I'm not good at this. How do you get that anger not to turn into bitterness?
Well, I think that I think we sometimes are naive to think that the grieving process is like a straight line.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's much more of a circle. Things circle around and come back.
Mm-hmm.
I know that, just dealing with this particular issue, I think, and you, I'm sure, I think you, I've, having read some of your books, I know there are a lot of gay men who innocently get married and feel guilty about it, feel terrible, and work it through with their wives and families, and each person, each partner moves on in their lives in an acceptable kind of way. I think the bitterness comes in when, like as you're saying, anger can be a very good part of the grieving process because it helps us take action. You know, when we're sad and depressed, we don't want to get out of bed and we're confused about what to do. But when we start to get angry, we begin to start imagining taking steps, taking action to help ourselves, and going into therapy or talking to friends and that sort of thing. I think the bitterness comes in when the partner, the gay male partner, kind of continues to be abusive. And, you know, in a divorce process, quite often you see some of these men, maybe, you know, in some of the situations that I'm aware of, the female partner may make quite a bit more money than the gay male partner. So you see some of this, that the desire to exploit the female get carried out through a divorce process. So I think the bitterness, you know, can sink in when there isn't any remorse or attempt on the gay male's part to make amends, you know, to empathize and see the damage that their behavior did to their wife. They just sort of think, well, just you should move on, forget about it, you know. And like you, I think that you have one statistic that it's like 60% of the men don't even never disclose to their wives, right? They never disclose to their wives
that
they're gay.
I feel so bad for that. And you know, I have this argument with some of you. I don't know if you run across it too, where gay men say to me, "Why do I have to tell her that I'm gay? You know, I'll end the marriage, and it would have ended anyway, because we've grown apart." And I say, come on, give me a break. You know, you owe this to your wife. You owe her the truth. You didn't grow apart. You're gay.
Right.
You know, let's not blame it on what it's not. You know, I try to, and sometimes I'm successful, but not all the time. And because
right.
I have the confidentiality issue, I can't be the one to tell their wife. But I strongly encourage them, you know, if you have any kind of feeling or, you know, conscience, you know, you're calling me to start with, means that you must want to do something right, do the right thing. But unfortunately, it doesn't work that way. A lot of these men will never admit it.
Right.
Because
no,
they've been
sad.
Told online, by the way, not to admit it. I don't know if you've read that in what I've written.
Kind of
they
the,
have
the
their own network
the,
of people.
Yeah.
Yeah, they have their own network of people saying, don't tell your wives, because if you do, you're going to pay heavily for it, you know, as far as child support or getting this or getting that, or they'll blackmail you. You know,
right.
It's just so sad.
It's tragic. It really is, yeah. And
because
really,
then you
it
leave
would
your
be...
wife with all this, you know, at least if she could move on and say, you know what, it's not that I
it
screwed
wasn't
up.
Me.
It was just, it wasn't
yeah, it
me.
It wasn't me. Yeah,
and that, but so many of our women are afraid to get into new relationships because they don't, you know, when they can't get that confession, and unfortunately, some women will never accept a confession. They'd have to actually catch their husbands having sex with another man. But
right.
You know, for some women, I just say, you know, you have enough evidence. A straight man wants a woman. You know, if your
right.
husband hasn't touched you from the beginning of your marriage, that has to be your red flag there. You
right.
know, if he's doing all these other things, going to gay bars, looking at gay porno. And,
right.
Bill, what's your feeling on the gay porno? Because, you know, of course, these guys come back at, well, there's nothing wrong with gay porno. It doesn't mean you're gay. What is your feeling on that?
Well, the gay porno thing, I think, is obviously it's harmful. But I think it's, you know, you get into... you mentioned HIV, like some of the gay men infecting their wives with STDs, including HIV. You know, they're committing a crime. It's not just immoral and unethical and wrong. It's illegal, and they're drastically changing the health and well-being of their wives, you know, forever. So I think that it's, you know, just the idea of sex as a weapon is a theme, you know, and even in the HIV, I led a number of HIV groups over the years, and, you know, the guys would talk about it, that they were inhibited themselves in having sexual relations with other men, and these were out gay men, because of their fear of infecting these other guys, was like sex would be a bullet, would be a weapon that would injure them, injure the partner. So I think that what I've seen with the gay porn, it's like the thing that I've it's kind of a paradox. What I've noticed is that a lot of the gay men will leave straight porn on their computers for their family to see, and it's like a smokescreen. They're leaving the straight porn to be discovered, to suggest to their wives that in fact they are straight men. But I think that the idea of in kind of engaging themselves in a pattern of just watching gay porn on the internet, I think it's obviously a problem. It's a way for them to.
You don't know straight men who do that, do you?
Straight men don't watch gay porn.
That's what I'm saying.
Straight men don't watch gay porn. Straight men don't say, "Oh, my wife smells. Oh, I don't want to have sex with her ever." You know, it's just that it just doesn't happen.
Right. Women have to know that even if you don't get a confession, that these are definitely signs that you don't really need a confession. You have to just start thinking that there's something wrong with this man. I mean, and
you know, Bonnie, I think it's so important that you're doing this work, and you've been the leader in this field. Because don't you think even those wives, it's very difficult for them to really believe that their husbands are gay.
And I think that's because people don't understand gay, Bill. Even
right.
to this day, I was having this conversation yesterday with someone who said, "Can you believe it?" I said, "Yes, I can believe it because, I was always socialized, and I'm your age. Well, I would like to be your age. I may be 2 years older. But we grew up in pretty much the same generation. And
right.
I grew up in the years of sexual promiscuity. I was out in
right.
California in 67, 68, 69, where everything went, everything goes. And
right.
there were people having sex orgies and partners and,
right.
I was in my late teens, and I was very, screwed up, too. I wasn't doing the group stuff, but, I was out there. And the thing is that nothing would shock me because I just thought that's a sign of the times.
Right.
And then you would read these books, Dr. Kinsey, the Mr. Sex Expert, who I really think he was probably gay, saying that at least, 78% of all males have some kind of sexual encounter when they're growing up at some point. He had a Kinsey scale of 1 to 7, where you can be a little bit gay but not a lot, or a lot gay and not a little. Like the scale,
right.
like how crazy
right.
is that?
It's pretty crazy.
It is crazy. I say I have a body
it's kind of,
scale.
If you have to make such a big fuss over it's that's symbolic of something else.
How do you know where you are on the ladder? I mean, come on. I have the Bonnie K scale. 1, you want a penis, you're gay. You don't, you're not. It's very simple.
Well,
to
I'm
me.
With you, Bonnie, and really all the gay friends I have and the gay men that I've worked with, who are out gay men,
mm-hmm.
say the same thing. It's like
exactly.
kind of the concept of bisexuality. They just sort of laugh. They'll laugh
exactly.
about it and say, "Oh, yeah, okay, yeah, that means you're gay, all right? You're too young to admit
now.
It."
You know what? One of the women in my group said it best of all. I say I'm tired of arguing with guys. Call yourself whatever you want. But, we can just say you're a man who likes to have sex with men. If that makes you feel better, fine. We don't have to use that word gay. But you're
right.
having sexual sex with men. Because she
right.
said that's how she's going to present it to her children. She's not going to use the word gay. She's going to say your father wants to have sex with men.
I remember reading that. Yeah, I read that in one of your
and
books.
I thought that
yeah.
was brilliant, right? What do I have to put a
yeah.
label on you for? I mean, I call you, call yourself a penis man.
Yeah.
if you want a penis, you don't have to say gay, bisexual, asexual, confused sexual. Just
right.
say that. Maybe it'll be a little trendy. But my
right.
point is that when people just can't deal with it and they can't, come out with it. And, I do realize that it is a very hard decision for many men to be able to be honest with themselves. But you just don't have the right to take somebody down with you. And as I was mentioning about knowing about it, when I was in the 60s and 70s, I didn't understand it. I don't think any of us did. We thought
right.
that you tried it, you didn't like it, so you're marrying a woman. I had a boyfriend who I was going with before my gay husband who told me he had been with a man. And he tried it, he didn't like it, then he went with women. So I thought, well, he's straight. And he ended up, of course, gay.
Oh,
but
well,
he hadn't come to terms with it. I think
I see. Yeah.
men don't have long-term relationships with other men and then become straight. I just feel that you may want to suppress it.
No, it doesn't. Yeah.
Right?
No, no, that's true. Yeah, it's a part of the, you know, genetic blueprinting that occurs at conception. You know,
exactly. And I just say that if the guys don't understand it, how would the women understand it? Like you're saying, you know, a lot of times women don't understand it. Well, how can we when the men themselves don't understand it?
Right. Yeah, and I think that, you know, there's so much wrong with our culture in,
uh-huh.
like just that, you know, like that, I don't know if you've been following the Catholic Church,
the
Vatican situation that just recently, and one of the very conservative cardinals from America, Raymond Burke, who is just really a hostile anti-gay person in the world, and I'm sure he led the movement among the American bishops to, you know, to withdraw the welcoming message for American gay men and women, and also the divorced men and women who would like to have a more vibrant relationship with that church. So it's a very tough situation. I don't know. Did you know that Freud? You know, back I forget it was 1896. He believed that children were being raped and abused in their families, and wrote his paper, The Origins of Hysteria, that basically documented that here are adults who had been sexually assaulted within their families. And when he gave the paper, his colleagues were so appalled and angry at him that he basically withdrew his he basically went silent on this and changed his theory to say that, you know, the Oedipal complex, you know, that the idea that children go through a phase of being sexually attracted to one of the opposite sex parent, and basically there's no science that supports that, and it was many historians who have looked at this think of Freud as having basically just betrayed all those, you know, men and women that he was treating who had been sexually abused. So this idea that somehow sex is something we shouldn't talk about, and that there is one way of being, of defining a loving relationship, that it has to be between a man and a woman, it's just done tremendous damage. And I know a lot of young gay men who they're using a word called fluid now. Have you heard that?
Oh yeah, sexuality.
Fluid, yeah.
Fluid.
They care. Well, I'm fluid. You know, I'm really attracted to, you know, there's some women I'm really attracted to, and you know, the truth is, you know, because they find a woman attractive and can have sex with a woman, it doesn't mean that they're going to be able to develop a meaningful marriage. You know, because really, I mean, my wife and I have been married 32 years, and our marriage is not based on having sex.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not. You know, it's a long marriage like ours, it starts to look like, you know, you just really like your partner, and you spend a lot of time, and you take long walks together, and you talk, and when you go to bed, you hold each other, or you know, we keep each other's feet warm, and there's so much more emotional nurturing that takes place that's non-sexual. And, you know, gay men are just
right,
not...
Right, but you know what? It wouldn't have happened unless you had it to start with.
Right.
I really believe that relationships has to have sexual intimacy. I'm not saying it has to maintain for 32 years, but
at least
you build up
that
sexual, you know, intimacy over the years.
Right.
And, you know, I had
a
problem.
There's got to be that chemistry, of course.
Well, right. And, you know, I think sex does build intimacy and love and passion, especially in earlier years throughout your relationship. But it can't stop, like, in the first 7 months.
It cannot stop in the first 7 months, yeah.
Or otherwise,
yeah,
you're not going to have a chance to build
it. I didn't mean
to
imply that, you know, like, a relationship becomes asexual. That's not a healthy thing at all. But like as you say, these, you know, in the mixed marriage situation, quite often the satisfying sexual relationship ends within a few months.
And sometimes it's not even a satisfying sexual relationship, because sometimes it's very unsatisfying. It's just a sexual act. You know, these guys will just do it.
It's kind of like what I hear a lot and what I read about is that you know, gay men are into sort of a missionary position, but are not, they're not really, they don't really like touching their female partner.
Absolutely,
there's not a lot of
romancing
or
foreplay.
Physically pleasuring. Right. There's no such thing as foreplay. Yeah.
Right. And
yeah, there's definitely a lot of signals.
Yeah. They're doing the deed. It's very mechanical, you know, because they feel they're supposed to do it, or maybe they feel that this will change them if they do it.
Right.
But I say that men are sexual beings, and that's why when you're in your 20s, any kind of sex can feel good.
Exactly,
A lot of guys, they can perform with a woman in their 20s. They can come to the point of orgasm. They can have, you know, some sexual satisfaction. But it's not the kind of satisfaction where, you know, women have to be fighting to have sex with them.
Right.
Men by nature are sexual people. So when you're 25 years old, you shouldn't have to be sitting there begging your husband, why can't we have sex more than once every 3 months?
Right.
And him telling you you're a nymphomaniac. Why are you always thinking about sex?
Right.
About the asexual men in these marriages?
It's tragic,
What about the men claiming they're now asexual? Married men.
Yeah. Right.
Like, what's with that?
Well, this concept of being asexual.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, I think I missed your question, Bonnie.
Well, like these men get married and then all of a sudden they turn asexual.
The research that I'm familiar with suggests that there's a very small percentage of human beings who are asexual. I haven't studied it well enough, but I have talked to some people who have claimed this about themselves, but it's a very small percentage. I think what happens with every relationship, the sexual relationship can be difficult to maintain and nurture through the years. But even gay men who become committed to each other and even get married, they have a hard time being sexual together. There's so much internalized homophobia that the idea of being sexual with each other has some emotional ramifications that are difficult for them to manage. So a gay man involved with a straight woman, it's for them to be saying they're asexual, I think it's just sort of a defense mechanism for them. You know,
I say if he's asexual and looking at gay porno, he's not asexual.
Yeah, that's not asexual, right?
Right, they're looking at gay porno.
I'm asexual.
And
I'm not, you know, it's not sexual with my wife. I'm not sexual. You know, again, it's like, as you said before, and we've talked. It's the tragedy is that they can't just say, you know what, I'm really sorry. I thought I could be married, but I can't. I'm gay. I'm interested in having sex with men, and that rules you out, and we should separate or develop some other type of agreement. You know, it can happen, and there are a lot of mixed marriages of this sort that people can work through a lot of issues and you know, develop healthier relationships for themselves and maintain some type of relationship with each other and with children, uh-huh, so that people feel good about what's happening in their lives. So,
yeah, I really do believe that there's any way to salvage a good friendship. Well, I don't know if it's so much a good friendship, but a family relationship. Look, you know, my ex-husband, I mean, I can't even get into what he's like. But when I had children, I was raising them, you know, I made it like we were the best of friends just for their safety and security.
Right.
You know, and I see people who can do this when they have, you know, good ex-husbands.
Right.
Or men who genuinely really support, you know, emotionally and financially the family. I'm really all in favor of learning how to, you know, bite your tongue, forget the past, try to deal with the present, you know, be friends so you can co-parent the children. That's the best of all circumstances when you can do it.
Exactly.
It can't always be done, but I do see people doing it. I think
relationship. Don't you think that it's like, you know, being therapist, we're working with a probably more of a population of people who, you know, who are injured and are having trouble negotiating these relationships, and the husband probably is more narcissistic and self-absorbed and lacks empathy, so it's more impossible for them to engage in a more emotionally supportive relationship, so they just disappear.
I wanted to ask you this because this is a major concern, and I'd like to get your input as a male therapist on this. When men, many times in these marriages, will come out and tell their wives, the ones who do, and they say, well, you have to keep it a secret, and I don't want the children to know. What are your feelings about not telling the children? Because I really
dangerous. I'm sure we agree on this. You know, any kind of secret can be very damaging, and a secret like that is wrong and really unhealthy, and would be a way of would be damaging to the children. So, no, I don't think, you know, the straight wife should not keep it a secret. And if it's kind of like the elephant in the living room, you know, it's asking the wife to deny, because the children are going to pick up stuff. They're going to notice mom and dad not really having a lot of contact and not being affectionate, and for them to understand that dad's gay and is unable to accept it is going to be helpful to them in moving understanding what's going on. And
this is when the marriage splits up and they still don't want the children to know. And see, my issue with that is that, you know, there's all age-appropriate ways to tell kids. But first of all, in my research over, you know, 30 years now, I have found that there are almost double the amount of children, you know, are gay coming from a gay parent. So if it's like 10% across the board of, you know, people are gay, when you have a gay parent, that average really goes up. You know, if we're keeping gay a secret, it's like giving the implication that something's bad with it.
Exactly, yeah.
So then your children are going to have to suffer again. Not only, you know, that they think something's wrong with them, and then, you know, if you can't say anything good about gay or that you are gay, at least it would explain to the gay child, you know, where this is coming from.
Exactly.
And having an acceptance or understanding of it. But I think we're giving a bad message when we're saying keep it a secret, right?
It's a bad message, yeah. I think you're eloquent in the way you're describing the need for openness and transparency. For your listeners who are, you know, grappling with this issue, it's certainly there are appropriate ways to do this, and enlisting the help of a therapist can be a very good way to proceed. And you wouldn't want any kind of disclosure in a family to be damaging to children. But I think for a mom and a wife in this situation to, you know, have a good therapist, a family therapist that can help them with their kids would be a wonderful way to approach it. And definitely they should not keep it a secret. They should not agree to maintain, you know, to keep a lie like that.
The problem with that is that it puts a burden on the wife. You know, when a husband says, well, I don't want the kids to know, or I don't want people to know why the marriage is breaking up, then right away the wife feels, well, not only now do I have to end my marriage, but I have to take also responsibility for something that had nothing to do with me.
Right.
You know, that people are going to look at me and say I failed as a wife when it had nothing to do with my failure.
Right.
You know, I think it's really unfair. And then the children, once again, having to find out maybe from friends or through other ways. I think I really do believe secrets destroy families.
They do, yeah.
I've learned that through the years. I didn't used to think that, but now I have seen it, the evidence of it from our own children, you know, who are growing into adulthood, and how it's really hurt them so much.
Exactly. You know, when you have in families, there's a shared reality, but children and parents, you know, see things from their own perspective. And, you know, even, you know, when, like, within an alcoholic family, you have situations where the children, you might have some children who deny that their mom and dad or mom or dad was an alcoholic.
Uh-huh.
You know, and you have, it's like their denial of that reality is profound. So I think having, when you think about this, like, you're going to tell the truth and you're going to give your kids a chance in a safe environment, like a family therapy session that you're going to attend once a month or twice a month or something. You're going to really help the children see things more clearly and therefore see themselves more clearly and begin to kind of deal with their own doubts or concerns or questions so that they can have a shared reality that makes sense to them. So, yeah, the secrets are terrible, and in every, not just in this kind of situation, but alcoholism, drug addiction, mental illness, you know, suicide. It's all very, very, you know, the need for transparency is really paramount.
Bill, I hate to say that we're coming to the end of our show because it just went so fast. I just want to ask you, people able, I mean, are you accepting new clients also?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Okay, great.
Yeah, I have...
Because if it's okay, I'll put your information up on my website. And, you know, Bill's in the Chicago
great,
area.
Maria. Yeah. I wasn't, it's an hour-long show then, I see. Okay.
Yeah, well, we can go a little over. But I do want to say that one of the things that impressed me so much about you is that you also do training of other therapists, right?
Exactly,
so that they
yeah.
can get educational credits by going to your workshops.
Exactly,
so that is
yeah.
so impressive, and your whole, you know, your whole philosophy on helping people is so impressive. But is it only people in the Chicago area? Do you do Skyping or?
I do Skyping and telephone sessions as well, and
wow, that's
you know
great.
Sometimes yeah, I do everything I can to help.
So you don't have to be in Chicago, but it does help if you want to see him in person. However, you can travel
right.
from the West Coast or East Coast to see him. Or you can pick up
yeah.
a phone and talk to him. He is
exactly.
very, very handsome to look at. I will say that about you.
Oh, well, that's so nice of you, Bonnie. Yeah.
Well, it's the truth,
yeah.
Bill. You know, it's worth calling you just to look at you for that. But
yeah.
I mean, you're just such a calming influence, and I'm hoping that, you know, you can come back, you know, to our show.
I'd be happy to, yeah.
On a regular kind of basis so people get to know you, and then they'll start visiting you.
Sounds
and
great.
And you'll be helping them. So I really appreciate it, and hopefully within, you know, maybe in 2 months you'll come back again.
Awesome. That'd be great. I really appreciate you inviting me, and I've, you know, so enjoyed talking with you about these important issues tonight. Thanks.
Thank you, and I'll give you a whole bunch more we can talk about on our next one, too.
Great.
And
thanks
you for
a lot,
being
Bonnie.
So supportive to our women and to our clients and to all of our
yeah.
women. Have a wonderful week, and we'll be talking to you soon. If you do want to find out more about Bill, I did want to mention if you could give them your website.
Yeah, it's pretty easy, BillMartinChicago.com. So it's just my name, AdChicago.com, and I write a lot of writing on the internet with, I have a couple blogs, and
uh-huh.
they could just really type my name in, Bill Martin, comma, therapist, Chicago, and they'll find me. So,
all right, or you'll just write to me at bondk@AOL, and I'll send you
exactly.
the link.
Yeah.
All right, Bill, thank you so much. I really appreciate
you're welcome,
you being
Bonnie.
Here.
Have a good night.
Women, have a wonderful week. Good night.